Tonight, I would like to discuss, hopefully, Lechem Mishnah and other ideas of when you break bread, essentially. Some of it is pertinent to Shabbos. Some of it really is any time you're really making a hamotzi, although practically people only take the many steps on Shabbos, even though if they're technically applicable, even if you're having lunch or, you know, whatever, on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. So, Lechem Mishnah is obviously found in this week's parsha. The parsha discusses the month somewhat, and we have Lechem Mishnah as a zecher for the month that we got a double portion. There is discussion amongst the Rishonim, and Tosafos brings a few different deos, whether or not the month fell as a double portion. It seems to be conflicting with Midrashim. On Erev Yontif, the minhag is to have Lechem Mishnah on Yontif, but the source of that could be somewhat, interesting. If according to some midrashim, we didn't have a double portion the day before, but either way, certainly on Shabbos we did. There is a mitzvah to have Lechem Mishnah. There's a sugya that's brought in two places in Shas. It's brought in Brachos and Daf Lamed Tes, and again in Shabbos and Huf Yud Zayin. And that discusses the idea of Lechem Mishnah. You take two loaves of bread, preferably Shlemos. Interestingly enough, the Mechaber, when he mentions it, just mentions you take two pieces of bread, and in the Haggah, almost the Rama interjects that they're supposed to be Shlemos. And you take them and you make your bracha. Now Rashi says the purpose, Rashi and Shabbos tells us the purpose seems to be the bracha. And it's something that we'll revisit. Is it necessary that the bracha be on the shlemos, or is it just necessary to eat from the shlemos? And one of the nafkaminas we'll see, there is a minhag, although not very common, certainly in these parts, but in other areas it can be a little more common, where every person at the table makes their own bracha before they eat the bread. I don't advocate that minhag unless it's certainly yours. In general, the minhag is Bravam Hadras Melech, somewhat when it comes to Shabbos meal. One person is motzi everybody, even if in other places, if let's say we're all drinking some Diet Coke, we all make our own bracha. One person doesn't make it for everybody, but because of the nature of the mitzvah of Kiddush and Dan Hamotzi, the general minhag Yisrael is just to be yotzi with one person making the bracha. Nevertheless, there is a minhag in certain places where every person at the table makes his own bracha. That occurs after the main mevarich, the Baal HaBas, has made hamotzi on the two loaves of bread and has cut the challah and handed the other people the pieces just before they are going to eat.
And everyone makes a bracha, and that's on their slice.
On their slice. So are they
encouraged to this, so they're invited from the family.
So that's a different issue. I don't think it's widespread in these parts, but in certain Hasidisha parts, it is a minhag. And the question is that in violation of what Rashi is saying? Because Rashi is telling us that the mitzvah is to make a bracha on the Lechem Mishnah, on the two whole loaves of bread. So, when we look at this a little more, it's not so clear. Rashi obviously is explaining the Gemara. The Gemara says they have to be both seya, but seya sapas, what we would translate that as in English essentially, is you're breaking bread. You know, al shtei lechem yivtzu samimim is part of the zemer that in the zmiras that many sing. So, why is Rashi focused on the bracha? Generally, we take Rashi to be davka. At the same point in time, here, there is a bit of a raya that Rashi is just trying to say the beginning of the meal, meaning when you begin your meal, it should be done with two loaves of bread, and that most commonly would be by making the bracha. The person who starts the meal would be making a bracha on the bread before you break it. Why? Because there's a mitzvah to make a bracha on a shalim. That's a mitzvah in general. It has nothing to do with Lechem Mishnah. In general, if I have a whole loaf of bread, I'm supposed to make my bracha before having sliced it completely, because there's a chashivus to make a bracha on an entire loaf of bread as opposed to on a slice of bread. And therefore, Rashi may just be commenting almost orcha de milsa you know, just the way things naturally go, that because you have to have two loaves of bread, you're not going to first cut it before making the bracha, because the bracha is supposed to be made on a shalim. The bracha is supposed to be made on the whole loaf of bread before it is cut up. Therefore, I should just say, in the beginning of the meal, one should start with two loaves of bread, and then you can pass out the bread from that point on. The raya to this, there are two rayas. One is a really backwards raya. There's the taz that indicates that lechem mishnah is a deraisa. There's an asmachta or I should say everybody else learns it really is an asmachta from a pasuk discussing the man. But the taz seems to learn that it's a deraisa. Now, if lechem mishnah is a deraisa, then it's difficult to attribute that to a bracha, because brachas are only midrabanan. Now, we've dealt with that in the past. There's a Rabbeinu Yonah in the sixth paragraph of brachas that makes it seem like there's an iser deraisa if you don't make a bracha. And we've mentioned that maybe the mitzvah is only mitzvah midrabanan, but somehow you're over a deraisa, according to Rabbeinu Yonah at least, if you didn't do it. But still, the Rabbanan instituted brachas. And therefore, it's difficult to assume that a mitzvah deraisa is dependent on the Derabbanan. And it's very chaser to say that Rashi is learning that once the Rabbanan instituted the bracha Hamotzi, so now it's incorporated into the mitzvah, because it's just very chaser. It's not really what the sugya seems to be talking about. Now, it's a backwards proof, because it's not coming from Rashi, it's coming from the Taz. And the assumption is that the Taz has to read Rashi, so when the Taz read Rashi, Misama, he had to say this. At the same point in time, it's of note that the other Achronim really do disagree, Magen Avraham and others do disagree strongly with the Taz, and therefore, since it seems it's only Derabbanan, it's a backhanded, and I wouldn't say the strongest proof that one could really bring, in that it's not coming from Rashi himself. It's not unreasonable, as we revisit it, that once, if the in mitzvah is you have to start your meal with two whole loaves of bread, once the Rabbanan instituted that the definition of the beginning of a meal is a bracha, it's not so crazy, even if it is chaser left in the sugya, it's not too crazy, you know, when you do revisit that from that perspective also. So it's unreasonable that the Rabbanan would be what the Pasuk is talking about, but if the Pasuk is only talking about a general, you have to start your meal, then when the Rabbanan instituted it, maybe that's what the Pasuk is also talking about. Because that's now the new definition of the start of the meal. Now there's a much better raya, and that is, the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim discusses, what do you do if it's a Friday afternoon and you're having a meal and, you know, things are going wrong and you notice that it's Shkia. So what do? You have to make Kiddush and the like. So essentially what you do is you put Lechem Mishnah, you cover the bread on the table and you make Lechem Mishnah. Well,
I've seen it done in Purim.
Right. In the Halacha L'maisa, it's not advocated, other than some like to do it on Purim. And even that is debatable, because it's best not to eat a significant sized meal on a Friday, certainly Friday afternoon, in order that you should be hungry when Shabbos comes in. Technically, the halacha is applicable on any Erev Shabbos, as the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim is stating. On Purim, since you need Sudas Purim, some people like to have Sudas Purim in the afternoon, and they like to run it into Sudas Shabbos. Others like to do it only in the morning, in order to get around a lot of the issues. So that's this Paris Mapa Al HaShulchan, that they basically cover the bread on the table and essentially make some sort of Kiddush, depending if they were drinking wine or not, will depend on maybe if they make a Bar Piyagofen. And they bring Lechem Mishnah. Now, since they've been eating bread before, they don't make a new Hamotzi. So, what are they doing? They're bringing out Lechem Mishnah, and then they're going to cut it. But they're not making a new bracha. So it's almost like we're starting a new meal, but they can't make a new bracha. So that seems to indicate that there's no need to make a bracha, and that Rashi, when Rashi says the bracha, just means the start of the meal. Just to counter once again, one could argue that, once again, the focus of the Gemara is the beginning of a meal. The beginning of the meal is generally done with a bracha. Once a chacham defined that you need to start your meal with a bracha, memela, that's now the mitzvah of Lechem Mishnah. However, in the minhag that we mentioned, wherever it comes about, or however old it is, they started their meal with the mevarech first making the birchas hamotzi, and then each individual continuing in the group meal, but when he's eating his individual piece, makes his own bracha, they're still participating in the meal begun by the initial mevarech, and therefore it would not necessarily be a violation of lechem mishnah because you've begun your meal with lechem mishnah. You know, it's comparable, let's say, towards the end of the meal, so you decide to eat something that's shahakol as dessert, and everybody else is eating something that they don't feel you need to make a bracha for dessert. So you make a bracha. Does it mean you're not eating dessert with the rest of them? Of course you are. You just had a chiyuv bracha. Now here, why is there a chiyuv bracha? We mentioned in the beginning there's not necessarily. You could be yossi with the mevarech. Nevertheless, you're all eating together. Nevertheless, however this minhag, you know, began and evolved, it is in that fashion that they do this. It's clear that they're all eating together. The meal was started with lechem mishnah and the original mevarech making a bracha on the lechem mishnah, and that's how it has begun with that lechem mishnah. So, therefore, it doesn't seem to be as integral to the bracha, and more that the meal having been started with two loaves of bread, indicating that this is a special Shabbos meal, and Shabbos meals are recognized by the fact that we had a double portion of mutton the day before. You know, we can marry that obviously with our lechem mishnah. So you have your lechem mishnah now. You're going to make your bracha, and the question is, which loaf or loaves do you cut? So there are two main minhagim, and there are others as well, and they both seem to stem from the Gemara, or at least different interpretations of Rishonim in the Gemara. One of the Amoraim, it says, would cut one of the loaves, and the other one would cut for the entire table, or the entire table. And the reason I mentioned like that in two different possibilities is because we'll see it's a Machlokas Rishonim. The first Amor, who would cut one of the two loaves, is a prevailing minhag. I think most people probably do that. So you cut one of the two loaves, and that is, you know, generally seen that on Friday night, Alpi Kabbalah, people will cut the bottom loaf for the most part, and on Shabbos day they'll cut the top loaf, and that is Alpi Kabbalah. There's an issue with that. We are going to revisit that other Amora, as some Rishonim, and we'll see the Gra maybe even advocated going in a different mahalach of that Amora. But you're not allowed to be mavir really on the mitzvos, on a mitzvah. If you have a mitzvah in front of you, you can't pass over it to do a second mitzvah if they're both in front of you to do at the same time. So to pass over from one challah to the next might not be technically 100% prohibited to do that, but it's inappropriate to do that. So you're making a bracha, you have both loaves, so to be mavir, you know, if they're directly one on top of the other, so you're going to skip the top loaf and you're going to then cut the bottom loaf, you're essentially passing over the top loaf of bread, and that has a little bit of impropriety to that. Why would you be able to do that? So it's suggested that, right, let's say you're right-handed as I am, so you have the loaf, the bottom loaf, sticking out a little bit towards the right, and the knife is towards the right side, as if you're left-handed, then say left instead of right, but for me it's right because I'm right-handed. And that way, since it's sticking out, that's where you're going to cut. Obviously, on Shabbos day, cutting the top loaf, you're not having this concern. Don't have the right loaf or the bottom loaf sticking out to the right in such a situation. Otherwise, you're going to be essentially passing over that loaf to go to the top loaf. So that is the most common practice.
Is there an input to be vertical using by sticking out the lower loaf just a little bit? I just tend to have almost another one just a little bit tucked underneath the other one.
That's fine also. No, it definitely seems LP, so one should be under the other, but it doesn't have to be completely under. If you just tucked it under, that's essentially what you're doing is having one under really sticking out a lot. Yeah. Which is fine, right, 100%.
Is that cave or anything?
No, these things are not my whatsoever. These are just LP.
Kind of slow rubber in front of you.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, some people were less into these things than others, and you know, no problems there. The other amora mentioned in the sugya, so it says he cut either the whole table or for the whole table, or an amount that was big enough for the whole table. So what happened? Rashi says he would cut a significantly sizable piece, huge piece. And normally, one is not supposed to, when you take some food for yourself, you're only supposed to take the amount that you're going to eat right away. Otherwise, it looks like you're a glutton. But on Shabbos, when we're supposed to eat more, and drink more, and really indulge in delicacies, so it doesn't look that way, as long as you don't eat like a glutton during the week. So it's clear that you're doing this only for Shabbos. So Rashi says that that's what he would do. He would cut a very large piece. Now, according to Rashi, there's not necessarily going to be a machlokas now between the first Amora and the second Amora. The second Amora is just telling us it's complementing the first Amora. The first Amora would cut one of the two loaves. We've just determined, based on Sod and Minog, what certain people do, but it's only cutting one of the two loaves. And the second Amora is telling us that so long as during the week you cut normal amounts, on Shabbos you're allowed to cut a large piece to show that it's Shabbos and you're going to be eating more and you have a, you know, a chavivos ha-mitzvah, you really find the mitzvahs to be beloved. The Rashba has a different understanding as to what this Amora was doing, and he maintains that he would cut all the loaves on the table. Whatever loaves were around, he made sure to cut them all. So there's a lot of bread, essentially, which it does look like he's being gluttonous. Why is he cutting all these loaves of bread when, you know, is he going to eat all that food? Like, that's a significant amount of food.
More people at the table.
Of course, if he's cutting for other people on the table, that's certainly included. But we're talking about a very large amount, and that is something that the Ran, the Rashba, excuse me, and the Ran do ask on Rashi. What do you mean, Tov Ayin, that the Balabais, who's cutting, is supposed to cut a nice amount if there are other people. But we're talking, even if he's the only person, he's eating by himself, he would cut all the loaves, it seems, because he's going to eat a lot more on Shabbos, perhaps. It doesn't look like it's gluttonous, or it's, even if he's not going to eat it all, but it shows a chavivus that he wants to have a lot of food available for Shabbos, and therefore he would cut all the loaves. And based on that, and you do see sometimes that some people do cut both loaves.
Isn't that wasting food? I mean, didn't they have preservatives then, so... Whatever it is, it will be bad by the next day.
So, first of all, because they didn't have preserves, I think that they oftentimes would eat food that was a little more stale, and perhaps nowadays when we become a little, you know, more finicky about that kind of thing. But it would be important not to waste it, 100%. Either he would have to give it to other people, or he himself would eat it, or maybe half day old, 2 day old bread. I don't know. But correct, one should not waste bread. Nevertheless, we do find the Rashba holds this way, the Gra seems to advocate also, and therefore you do find commonly some people will cut both loaves of bread. In that case, obviously, there's no difference top or bottom. Start from the top and go through until you cut both. There's a minhag al-pi d'Arizal to have 12 loaves of challah. I haven't really seen that very widespread. Some people will have the two big ones, and then a bunch of little loaves, just to be yotze, because they don't want to waste that much food. Nevertheless, if you think about it, an interesting way to retrofit somewhat, I guess it wouldn't be retrofitting, assuming that Arizal was explaining the way the Gemara reads, we don't find the Gemara, but if he were to hold like the Rashba and the Gra, or the Gra is holding like him essentially, then it could be what he means is you should end up with a total of 12 loaves. So when you cut a loaf in half, you have two pieces. So there are three meals on Shabbos, two loaves at each meal is six. Cut all of them in half and you end up with 12. Because the first slice is making it into, you know, your essential pieces and then you're subdividing. General mitzvahs, betzias hapas, and this is no longer... anything really to do with Shabbos, you're supposed to break the bread and take from one piece of it. So if I've cut from the area which I want to eat, that you cut from the part of the bread that you like the most, so then, normally so you cut the challah, you've cut the end off, and now you're going to be slicing over You know, from the rest of that piece. That piece is what you've made your bracha on, essentially. Now, obviously, you're allowed to eat the entire thing, but that piece is considered to have more chashivas, it's more respectable, because it's considered as the bracha was chalik, almost as if it was said on the area of the bread that you're then subdividing. It's considered admirable that everybody tried to eat a piece from that side of the bread. So when you're cutting challah for the entire table, if you cut and then the mevarich takes from one side, he really should try to cut from that side of the bread into enough pieces for everybody at the table, that everybody be able to have a piece of that bread, of that side that the bracha had been made on. And then afterwards, for the rest of the meal, the rest of the bread, and that's the half that he didn't first start subdividing, can be obviously eaten. Is that clear? Or is that not clear? Okay, it was clear. Very good. There's a Shla who discusses, based on Afikomen, that some people like to leave a tiny drop from that original piece of bread, which has the mitzvah on it. You always want to finish your meal with the mitzvah sayom and the mitzvah salayla, somehow to continue that forth. So the mitzvah on the regular day is the birchas hamozi, it's your regular sustenance that you're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving your food on a daily basis. You've made hamotzi for that, you're really showing your dependence on God that He has been giving you food. So to take a little piece of that original bracha side, save it to the end of the meal, and that should be the last thing you eat.
That would be limited to Shabbos. That would be any day.
That's any day. Correct. That's why I said these last two parts that I've mentioned are Hilchos Betzias Hapas in general. They're non-specific to Shabbos. The Lechem Mishnah parts were specific to Shabbos. These last things have to do with general Betzias Hapas. Now, general Betzias Hapas, as we mentioned, it's always best to make a bracha on a whole loaf of bread. However, you don't want to make a bracha on a whole loaf of bread and then wait while you cut it, because now you're making a hefsek between the bracha and when you're able to eat. So there's a difference now between Shabbos and a regular day. On a regular day, you're actually supposed to make an incision into the bread sufficient enough that you can very easily, with your knife, cut and just finish it off, essentially. Enough that the two pieces are still connected, enough that if you pick it up, they'll stay together. At the same point in time, you'll be able to relatively quickly finish cutting. So what you do is you cut before you made the bracha to that point. Then you make the bracha, then you finish cutting, and then you eat from the bracha part. Whereas on Shabbos, we don't like to do that, because we like to have Lechem Mishnah. So Lechem Mishnah, we want to have a whole loaf. So in order to facilitate that, we don't cut the bread on Shabbos before making the bracha. However, a slight incision, just to get it started, is mentioned by some posting. There's two places the Mishnah Berurah talks about. In one place he says, don't make any incision in the bread. In another place he says, make a little mark. So it seems that the mark is more to say, I'm cutting from here, just to show where you want the bracha, so to speak. But even more so, especially if you have a thick crust, like a crunchy crust, and it's very soft inside, if you get that a little bit started, it'll at least start you. And just a slight incision isn't going to make a big deal. That it still looks like it's a completely whole piece of bread. Now, what is important is the purpose, the overall purpose of the incision is to make it quicker. So if you make an incision, and then you make the bracha, and then you start looking for it because you totally lost where you made that incision, that's not what you're supposed to do. If you can't find it right after you made the bracha, which happens frequently, just cut the challah. You know, it's not ma'akev in any way, and in fact, that's the exact opposite of what was supposed to happen. Now you're delaying cutting the bread. Some people cut the entire challah, pass it out, and take a piece. Other people, the mevarich cuts a piece for himself, eats it, and then passes it around. The diyukim can post them both ways, and one should follow his minute on that.
It's not wrong with that.
No, because it's really for the whole table. It's the tzarif of the entire achila. And there's the reason...
No, because you made the bracha, you made...
Yeah, because you made it for everybody, essentially. The reason, obviously, for the minhag that the mevarich takes from it first is clearly because of that exact reason, that it does seem to be somewhat of a hafzik. He made the bracha physically, and therefore he should eat from it. But if you think about it, everybody essentially made the bracha through him. So they're all, you know, waiting. And it's all a tzorich of the achila. As long as something is necessary for the food, then it's not really considered, and for the meal, it's not considered to be a delay. And that means, even after Amotzi, if there was no salt on the table, you're allowed to ask somebody to bring the salt if you want to put salt on the bread. Which brings us to the next point, salt on the bread. Now, this also is technically nothing to do with Shabbos. Theoretically, it's every day of the week. The Gemara Brachos tells us that you should dip your bread in salt or in something to make it tasty. The bread back then was very plain, and you know, most people didn't have a lot of good ingredients, and therefore, if they wouldn't dip it in salt, it was okay, but it wasn't very tasty. So it would be best, certainly, the piece that you made the bracha on, that should be a tastier piece. Halacha, we paskin, and it's brought down over there, that if you have bread that is tasty, which is essentially our breads nowadays, then you do not need salt. So halachically, there's no reason nowadays why one needs salt on the bread. It's considered, you know, bread is considered to be tasty enough. It's not considered to be very dried out and not having any taste to it. I don't know a different word to use at this point in time. And therefore, lahalacha, one does not need salt. Nevertheless, there is a minhag to have salt, and we have to differentiate. There are two different minhagim. There's one minhag that would only mandate that salt be on the table, and there's another reason, perhaps, to have the bread actually dipped in the salt. Tosos mentions that there's a medrash that tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, essentially, he looks at us, we're sitting at a table, we've washed, and we're all sitting doing nothing because we can't learn. And it's one thing if you're at least doing something that is productive, but to literally sit and do absolutely nothing shows that you're completely doing nothing. You're not productive in any way whatsoever. And there's a kitruk that happens. And therefore, we put salt, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a bris melech, made a covenant of salt, really, because salt preserves and keeps things lasting, so this covenant lasts eternally with us, that he won't destroy us, so we put salt on the table. Because of this minhag, one need not dip the bread in salt. It's sufficient just to have the salt on the table. And that's clear from Tosfos and clear from the Poskim that that's not the reason why one dips the bread in the salt. It's just to have it on the table as a remez that Hashem made a covenant to us, a promise He won't destroy us. We're in a situation where we're not able to do too many mitzvahs, even though it's kind of awkward because we are doing a mitzvah by listening to the Chacham and by not making a hafsik. But nevertheless, the fact that that's coming about by doing nothing, that has display, an outward display of as if we're doing nothing whatsoever. And so we'll put salt on the table as a reminder of the bris melech, this covenant that Hashem made with us. And the Magen Avraham mentions, and the Be'er Heitiv mentions a little bit more by Arichos, coming from mystical sources, that there's a reason to dip the piece of bread that you made the mitzvah on, the bracha on, into the Magen Avraham just says you dip it into the salt, and the Be'er Heitiv adds three times. So for Kabbalistic reasons, there's a reason to have the bread dipped into salt. Now, the way it's written is not to dip every piece into the salt. The way it's written is that, remember, you've made one cut, so now you have two very unequal loaves of bread. You have the one that's called the end, which you probably are not going to start subdividing just yet. And then you have the big piece that you're going to subdivide and give out to the people on the table. So you're supposed to dip that piece three times in the salt. Now there's two ways to do this. One is prior to subdividing that into small pieces that you're going to pass around the table, dip the whole thing, one, two, three in the salt. You've just been mekayim it, and now subdivide it. The other way is to subdivide it, and dip each piece. It stands to reason the first way makes more sense, even though it's not commonly done, because you're minimizing the hefsek, which is not necessarily the reason for this dipping of the salt, as we said. That was the other reason for having the salt the whole time on the table, is just so that you should have something there because you can't do anything, so we want to minimize that as much as possible. Is it a hefsek the other way? No. Why? Because since everybody thinks that they want salt on their bread, so it's considered a tzarech of the achila, even though if it's not really a tzarech, but they want it, so it's part of the meal. So anything that's part of the meal, you can. Nevertheless, if you dip the whole thing three times, I've never seen anybody complain, you didn't dip my piece in the salt. It could be people are just being polite, or it could be that, you know, realistically, they recognize the whole thing was dipped in the salt, and then you're subdividing it. So I would advocate dipping the entire big piece three times in the salt if you want to be mekayim that mystical dipping, and then subdivide it. But the other way is fine as well. When it comes to hefsek,
I've seen dafka sea salt because of the midrash or something that says that the Hashem told the oceans midrash. So Hashem said he gave them the rest of the salt on the table.
It's definitely not brought by the poskim. I can't tell you. There is another thing brought down that I'll call karbon chatakiv melach, that you should have salt on the table. Again, that's just to have it on the table, not instead of the dipping. That our tables nowadays are comparable to the mizbeach. That's Gemara in Chagiga, at the end of Chagiga. And therefore we compare our tables to that, and so to the mizbeach, and therefore, just like there was salt on the mizbeach, so too we have salt on our table. Doesn't necessarily say on the food. That's complementing Tosus's part. That's just having it out there. Just as an aside, Tosus and Chagiga seems to go back and forth about this. The pashtus in the pasuk over there in Yechezkel that's comparing the mizbeach to the shulchan, it's talking about the inner mizbeach, not the outer mizbeach. That's something just to think about. The inner mizbeach, just more on a hashkafah purpose, was for the ketores, which was symbolic of all the Klai Yisrael coming together. There are 11 different spices, including one that didn't smell too good, but they all mixed together and became unified. And the Kohen, who's bringing it, is considered to be the 12th element. So it's all the Shvatim coming together in a unified fashion. And our tables nowadays are supposed to mimic that by inviting all of Klai Yisrael and making sure that everybody has a place at the table. As opposed to the outer Mizbeach, Karbanos were brought on it, but it didn't have that element to it. So I think it is important, even if, as I said, Tosfos does discuss this in Chagiga, even if the literal translation of the pasuk is one way, are we taking it to even mean the outer Mizbeach or not? But I think it's important, the Kol HaPachos, that the pasuk that the Gemara is dashing is specifically Al-Pi Pshuto Shomekra, talking about the inner Mizbeach. That's just something to reflect upon when you think about your table nowadays being comparable to a Mizbeach, and to the Shulchan comparable to a Mizbeach. For that reason also, it's inappropriate to kill bugs on your table, just like you should not kill anything on the Mizbeach. Mizbeach brings forth life, and therefore we don't end life on our tables. Which is can be difficult to do when you're having a meal and there's a fly or something that comes on the table. Correct, but it's best not to do it on the table. If you want to clap above the table, or you want to smack it while you're sitting at the table, that's a different story. But to smack it on the table, it's not a halachic problem. Once again, it's symbolic, it's mystical, whatever you want to refer to it, depending if you are more on the mystical or less mystical side, it's at least symbolic, and one should be taken to heart, these concepts. So we try to refrain from killing things, certainly people, but even bugs at our tables. Continuing with the idea of hefsek, as we were mentioning before, there is an interesting Magen Avraham. It's not brought by most, if any, of the later poskim, but it's just interesting to think about. After you've washed your hands, so there are two shitos. Do you have to refrain from making a hefsek or not? Now, once I've made hamotzi, it's clear. No hefsek. Once I've made hamotzi, I must eat immediately. No, nothing. Not even a duration of time should laps before I eat it. But after I've washed my hands, is there a problem to make a hafsek? And it's machlokas. The Mechaber says yesh
lizot. Before the bracha for sure.
Before the bracha of hamotzi. Oh, before the bracha of al netil sidayim, you're still dealing with the al netil sidayim. So meaning you wash your hands, and then before you dry them, people usually, while they're drying, say the bracha. You're really supposed to make the bracha and then dry your hands. And that has to do with the drying is still part of the mitzvah, so you haven't finished up, you still have what to make the bracha on. So you make the bracha and you dry your hands. Now that you've done that, so there are 2 days, can you make a hafsek at this point or not? You definitely have to wash your hands not to touch part of you that's normally covered, you know, to scratch your head, let's say under your yarmulke, which is normally covered, to really scratch it and you know, on your head would be a problem. You'd have to wash again if you did that in the middle of the meal. So you certainly have to make sure your hands stay clean, relatively clean as you
touch somebody else's hand.
So touching somebody else's hand, it depends. Yes and no. Touching somebody else's hand is only if they're metame, the water in your hand. So if somebody has washed their hands,
they're dry.
Well, even if it's not dry, if somebody's already washed their hands, even if they're still wet, and you just washed your hands and your hands are wet, so the water on their hands and in your hands, they're equal, essentially. They're not being metame, the water on your hands. That's not a problem. If your hands are dry after having washed, and somebody else touches your hands, that's also not a problem, because it's only a problem if they were metame, the water on your hands. It's only if you haven't fully dried your hands and somebody who has not yet washed touched your hands. That's when it's a problem, because then they were metame, the water on your hands, and now you have to wash again. But if
that a bracha?
Yes, because your netilas yadayim effectively is in order to be metare your hands. We hold stam yadayim are tame. Shnios. It has to do with something to do with truma, even though obviously we're not eating truma, but nevertheless we do
for
bread.
Anyways,
correct, but this is a special, you know, gzeiras chachamim as a harchaka to deal with truma and the like. So we wash our hands for bread, certainly, and once we've done that, we've been entire then to get them to this point. And that being the case, so you know, you are only going to be a problem if somehow your hands become tummy again. And that could only happen if they're still wet. Otherwise, it's just an idea. Can you or are you allowed to make a hafsek? Can I start shmoozing? Can I, you know, just take a break? Whatever it is, as long as I'm going to wash my hands and make sure that I don't make them unclean again. So there are two opinions. And the Mechaber passes Tov Lizar. So that's what we try to do. We try not to make a hafsek. The Rama mentions when it comes to Matosos, that deals with the karbonos of mitzora, that a hafsek here is also even if you just wait a duration of time. This is the Rama talking, coming from Tosos. It would take to walk 22 amos. Now, how does Tosos get his 22 amos? Because there's normally a rule that a person has on many karbonos, he has to do what's called smicha. He takes his karbon and he leans on the karbon with all of his weight, all of his might. And immediately after doing that, he's supposed to have a shechita, or he himself does the shechita on the animal. A mitzvah isn't able to do that because he's not allowed into the Beis HaMikdash. So he does the smicha, and then it's brought from the location where he is into an area to do the shechita. The minimal amount is, you know, based on where he would be standing until where his carbon has to get before it could be done, processed with the shechita, is 22 hours. And the conclusion over there in the sugya is that he doesn't have to have his smicha and shechita together. So it's considered as if there's no tekif, there's no immediacy. The issue with netila is an immediacy of making the netila and then having your hamotzi immediately after. So you have tekif le netila, do you have to have your hamotzi? So if 22 amos worth is no longer considered tekif, then you've effectively, says the Rama, been over a hafsek. Now, if you think about it, let's just do some simple math. There are 2,000 amos in a mil, which also, the way we calculate shear mil has to do with this week's parsha. It's a totally different sugya. Don't worry, we're not going there. I thought about it for a second, then realized, no, we're not doing that. So 2,000 amos is going to equal 18 minutes, 20 minutes, 22 and a half minutes, 24 minutes, depending on your shiur meal. So you break that down. So what is 22 amos?
1.1%.
Exactly. That was pretty good. So it's coming out to about 11, 13 seconds. You're not dealing with a significant portion of time, and that's considered a half second. Says the Magen Avraham, well, hold on one second. I look at Tosos, and he says that we put the salt on the table because there's this kitchuk, there's this din that is, we're subjecting ourselves by doing nothing. Right? Now, why are we doing nothing? Because we don't want to make a hafsek. Me'ikar adin, b'di'eved, I should say, we hold, if you made a hafsek, it's not the biggest deal. You don't have to wash again. Because there are two deos, and Mechaber only says tov li'tzar. It's best to be machmir if you can. Well, you've already made the hafsek, so why are you just sitting doing nothing? Don't just be so mech on the salt on the table. You should talk in Torah. Talk in Torah until you can eat. So the Magen Avraham says, once you've waited your 11, 13 seconds, whatever it is, stop being silent, and you actually should talk in Torah until the hamotzi is made and until you eat. Now, in practice, you have to realize that we don't count anything that was necessary for the meal as contributing to the hefsek. So your 11, 13, 15 seconds, whatever it is, depending on what your shiur meal is, the clock doesn't start if the reason why you're waiting is for something to do with the meal. If there was no salt on the table, so you're all sitting while somebody went up to the other room to get the salt, so that's a tzorich of the achila while you're waiting. So that's not going to have the clock starting. It's stop time. As the play is not in motion, we stop the clock. The clock is only running if literally it has nothing to do with the meal, and you're just waiting for no reason, which could happen. It does happen sometimes, and especially in larger families, where one person is in the back of the house and they forgot, they didn't know. You don't need them for the meal. They could really wash again, do their own thing. This person's changing. This person's this. Who knows what's going on? So in a situation like that, if you wash, which is why a lot of times in bigger families nobody wants to be one of the first ones to wash. They want to be that last person because they know it's going to happen. So there really might be a reason. Certainly Magen Avraham would advocate. I did mention that later Muslims don't bring it, but it is a very reasonable assessment. And that is, once you've gotten to that point of your 13, 15 seconds, whatever it is, 11 plus seconds if it's an 18-minute meal, if you hold, then you really should start talking in Torah at that point in time. You may get some dirty looks from other people at the table, so you might want to do it very discreetly and
is
quietly.
Is this including waiting for other people to wash is part of the meal?
That's part of the meal, because they're all going to be eating together. But if the reason why that person isn't coming to the table isn't just that there's a significant amount of people that are washing, there's somebody in the back who's, changing, as I said.
Another guest is here to arrive.
Right, and you're literally just waiting and you mistakenly washed beforehand. That's when we're dealing with literally just suspended time. And then it would be better to perhaps just talk into her at that point, according to the Magen Avraham. So we covered a lot of different things. A lot of it was pertinent really to Bitzias HaPas, just breaking bread in general. Some of it also was to Lecha Mishnah, but they're definitely very pertinent daily and then weekly halachas. And a lot of times people do a lot of stuff and kind of don't really know and just see different people with different minhagim. So hopefully we touched upon a good portion of them.